We'll continue with what last week we took a little break and spoke about Shavuos, and now we go back to what we were talking about beforehand, preparing for Shabbos, and we spoke about the fact that there's a mitzvah to have fresh challahs for Shabbos, and not just to have fresh challahs, but actually there's an inyan to bake challahs for Shabbos, that the challahs should be fresh for Shabbos, that the challahs should be kosher for Shabbos, especially in places where Pas Yisrael was not available. So this was one way of having Pas Yisrael by baking it yourself. And thirdly, so that a woman can be mekayim the mitzvah of challah, which has particular place and special inyan for them to do it. We spoke about what it means to take challah, and that challah is only taken from a dough that has 43 1/5 beta. The question is how to convert that into modern, into our measurements. And then beta is a measurement of volume. Today, flour is sold by weight. So you have to know the density of flour is different to the regular, to water. Water is one to one. 1 liter equals 1 kilo. By flour, it's approximately half of that. 1 kilo of flour would be 2 liters. And that's half the density. Therefore, to get to 43 beta, how much would you need? So we said that the mainstream shita that is nahug is Reb Chaim Noe, who holds that when you make a dough of 1.6 kilos, so then you are chayv to take challah with a bracha already. Some people are machmir to the shear of the Chazon Ish, which is 2.25 kilos. Only then would they make a bracha on the hafroshes challah. 1.66 is, yeah. But everybody agrees that already at 1.2 kilos, some say, well, even could be a drop less than that, but everybody agrees that from 1.2 kilos you need to take challah. Just at that point you don't make a bracha because we're worried that you have not yet had a shear. So it's a suffix. So on a suffix you don't make a bracha, but Yitzchak should take challah because we choshish that could be a shear. An interesting side is the Rambam gave a measurement based on a coin that they used in his day. And he said the volume of this coin, I'm not sure if he went by volume or weight, but the size of that coin that he refers to, he uses an indication, and therefore you need 520 of these coins in order to get to a shear. I think it's a shear challah that he's talking about over there. And that seems to be the basis of all discussion any time further after the Rambam. So the Rambam seems to have a very clear Masoris, and he gave us an exact amount. But now the question is, 1,000 years after the Rambam, what coin was he using? So he calls the coin a dram, and there were Achronim in Europe who misunderstood and thought maybe he meant the drachma, which is what they used in Czechoslovakia or in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Reisnicht, what part of Europe exactly. And they came up with a very large shear, and most of the Achronim said, we don't know what the dram is, and therefore they started making measurements of their own. So we have things, we have the Chazal tell us all sorts of things about, we know, for example, a mikveh, the minimum requirement of water in a mikveh is 40 seah. The Chazal also tell us that 40 seah fits into the area of 1 amma by 1 amma by 3 ammas. So 3 square ammas is 40 seah of liquid. So now you've got a relationship between length and volume. And based on that, you can work things out. But one of them you've got to have. You either got to have the length, and therefore you can work out the volume, or you got to have the volume and work out the length. But when you're left with not much, so what do you do? So we know that a tefach is made up of 4 etzbois, and a amor is made up of 6 tefach. An amor is a arm length, so we know it's from the tip of the finger to the elbow, and a tefach is a hand breadth, and etzba is the width of a thumb. So go measure. And they went and they measured, and they came up with all sorts of interesting problems with it. I'm not going to go into full detail on this whole subject, but basically already in the times of the Nadi Yehuda and others, that's going back 200 years ago, maybe a little more than that, they had questions on their Masoris of, did they have the right Masoris for Gavi the Shiurim? And therefore in Europe already they started being Machmir. Reb Chaim Noe lived in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they had quite a solid Masoris about what they used as a size, and they used Well, they had a certain source of a certain size. So Chaim Noe came along and he said, you know, let me research it. And he went to find out what is this coin that the Rambam's talking about. It was called a dram. So he went and he found a Turkish dram. And according to the Turkish dram, he came out with his shiur. And that pretty much fit with what was the minig oilam, minig in Balashkenaz and the Sfarim, except for those who were machmish, were a larger shiur. He pretty much came out that was minig oilam. The Chazanish didn't want to take that as fact, and therefore he went and did his own investigations. He didn't discuss coins, but he discussed lengths and sizes, and he got the sefer to write a sefer on it, Shiurim Shel Torah, where he comes out that it must be that the eggs that we have today are half the size of the eggs that they had in the times of Chazal, and based on that, everything changes. The Kazayas that we have is smaller than the Kazayas of Chazal, and therefore the distance and the measurement and everything changes. And then we have our charts and tables of how to work out the Shurim according to the Chazon Ish. I might say in more recent times, Reb Chaim Banish from Bnei Brak went to the British Museum and got hold of an Egyptian dram, not a Turkish dram, and he dated back to the times of the Rambam, and he says now we have a more accurate shear because we can see what coin the Rambam was actually using, and now we can really come and make a decision of what is considered a proper shear. And he comes out that the dram of the Rambam was smaller than the Turkish dram, and that's where we get the shita of 1.2 kilograms. And as far as I know, most poskim are choshesh to the shita lechatchila, especially when you need a smaller shear. So there's I can think of two particular examples where we choshesh lechatchila to this. One is a person has to take shiurim on Yom Kippur. For a person to avoid an isur kares on Yom Kippur, he has to take less than a kazayis toke de achilas pras. In order for an achila to eat something, to be considered as eating in order to fall into the requirements of having done a aveira against the Torah's requirement of inui, of afflicting yourself on Yom Kippur, you have to eat a certain amount of food that satiates. If you didn't eat a minimum amount that satiates and you within the required amount of time, then it's still chatzishu asim in the Torah, because otherwise we'd all be eating on Yom Kippur shiurim. It's not something that becomes muta, but it doesn't fit into the get of an onish. It doesn't fit into what's considered as punishable, and therefore it's already a lower level. And a person in extenuating circumstances, that's the first thing we'll do. If that's not good enough, then of course we will let them eat. But that's how we get to the discussion. So you have. When a person has to take shiurim on Yom Kippur, so then the Rabbanim will tell them that you should make sure that you take less than a kazayis, even the more chumradik kazayis. So they usually say that's about, or it's kazayis of liquid and kazayis of food. Whoever has that child will go to a Rav on Erev Yom Kippur and ask for guidelines, but that's one of the shiurim they'll give. They'll give the smaller shiur possible, they'll be choshes to it. Another case where I've seen someone wrote a whole book about it, because a lot of people are actually not aware of this, and that is when you build a sukkah, so you need three walls to your sukkah. Now you can have a wall that when you look at it, you don't see anything except for strings, but yet it gets a din of a wall, because we have a rule called lavud. Lavud is that when I have two solid pieces that are within three tefachim of each other, we say that these solid pieces extend and touch and are considered the space between them is considered closed. So what you can do is you can take sticks and put them in the ground one after another. As long as there is a space of less than three tefachim between them, so the solidness of the stick is considered halachically closed till you get to the next stick, and you can build a whole wall like that. Or you can do it in the vertical plane. You put up two poles, one at the beginning, one at the end, where you want your sukkah to end and begin. And then you put up strings in between in the vertical plane, and those strings are solid, and the space between them is less than three tefachim, and that fills up your wall, and then you have a halachic required wall. So it's really made of the thinnest gut that you can find in string, but halachically that is considered a wall. So now in order for lava to work, this rule of considering it solid, the space between the solids, meaning the trace between the strings, the sticks, whatever you're using, has to be less than three tefachim. If that comes out, According to Chazon Ish, the Shia three Tefachim will be 30 centimeters. According to Reb Chaim Noe, it's 24 centimeters. And according to Reb Chaim Banish's recalculation based on the Rambam's dram, comes out to 22 and a half centimeters. So if someone spaces his strings in his sukkah at above 24 and below 30, so could be that even the Chazon Ish would say not to use such a sukkah. Either Chazon Ish says three Tefachim is 30 centimeters. The Chazon Ish himself held that his shiurim are only as a chumrah, not an ikar din. And therefore, when you need to be machmir to something, so you want to eat something, so you want to be yotzer that eating, so then I can understand that you're going to take a bigger shiur. When you take a kos for kiddush, you fill it up with 150 cc, so you can be mekayim the shiur Chazon Ish. But the other way around, here it comes out, it turns out a cooler. If you allow for 30 centimeter space, then it comes out that according to most shittas, the sukkah is possible. Take that one step further. Who says Reb Chaim Noe is the bottom line? He was based on the minigan and what he discovered, but we found out that the Rambam seems to learn that it was even smaller. And as I said, there's a Robin Harnoff wrote a sefer to prove the point that this 22 and a half is me'ikah hadin, and even though if you take challah at that amount, the minhag is not to make a bracha on it, because we are choshes that maybe Reb Chaim Noe is correct, but nevertheless, at that point, you got your chayv and challah. You wouldn't eat the bread without taking challah, because it could be tevil. There would be an aver in itself to eat it without taking challah. So too, how can you eat in the sukkah where you're relying on a lavud, and the lavud is more than 22 and a half centimeters? Where this comes out is most of us anyway make our sukkahs with solid walls, and we don't use so much of these straps because they come loose and they come, it's hard to find. But where it's very, very common is in restaurants and takeaway places, pizza stores and stuff like that. They put up these cheap sukkahs that are very easily to store. They're just a metal frame with a bunch of strings and a roll of sach, and you have your whole sukkah. So it pops up in 5 minutes, it puts away in 5 minutes, and it takes very small storage space. So they're extremely convenient. And comes out very often that the strings are not properly attached. Either not properly attached, or even if they are properly attached, they're not attached with the right spacing. The spacing might be too big. And I remember last Chol HaMoed Sukkos, we wanted to go to a pizza store, and it took us a long time until we found a sukkah that was halachic. Some of them, bichlal, weren't kosher at all. They just, the strings had snapped or had come loose and they were hanging, and so they weren't at all kosher. And some of them, even if the strings were attached properly, the space between them was too big, and I wouldn't eat a meal inside such a sukkah. So we had to go find a different sukkah that was built properly. So that's just an aside on shiurim. Now, a couple of more halachas that have to do with challah. As you said, challah, you need the minimum shear in your dough in order to be mafresh a challah from it. If it is less than the amount required, then you don't need to take challah. Also, if you took challah, it wouldn't help anything because it doesn't do anything. You can't take challah from something that's not chayv in challah. The main African minna we'll discuss in a moment. If you have two doughs, each one is smaller than the shear, and then you join them and make one big dough, so the fact that you took challah off from the smaller dough beforehand doesn't help. When you join them, now they're more than a shear, so now it's chayv and challah. So the fact that you took before doesn't help. That's number one. You should know that doesn't help. And also, now we're going to discuss what would be, when do we say that you can join two doughs and when not. So if the dough is of the same grain, not wheat and spelt or wheat and barley, but wheat and wheat, that's number one. And number two is that the person who is making the dough doesn't mind if the two doughs mix. So it will come out that if you're making two different doughs, like you're making a dough for a cake and a dough for bread, and they are made differently, and therefore if they would mix, it would ruin each other, then you makpid to keep them separate, that you can't say that they join together in order to create a shear. But if you're not makpid, there's some doughs that can be used for both, or you're making two batches, doesn't make a difference. So then, if you're not makpid that were they to mix, even though you wanted a kilo for here and a kilo for here, and you didn't want to have 1.5 kilos here and a half kilo there, so you're keeping it separate for other reasons, just for size reasons and not for because they're different, then you should put them together and take challah. How do you put them together? Best is if they actually touch in a kli, in a utensil that has sides to it, and the dough is actually touched, then you can take it. But even so, even if they don't touch, and if they're not within a kli that has sides to it, but they're just sitting on the same table, the same cloth, then you cover them, and that then makes a chibur, makes a join between them, and then you can be mafish chalawana. If you're making a single dough and you have intention to divide it up into smaller pieces, so it depends on why you're doing that. So if at the time that you mix the water with the flour, you have in mind that this is not going to stay one big dough, but rather it's going to become smaller doughs used for different things. So if it's a question that you're budgeting out, I need this dough that I'm making is going to make me eight challahs. So four of them are for this week and four for next week. So then it's just, then that's not considered as a division, because really you're not makbid exactly how that they touch and that's it's really considered as one dough. And even though you don't intend making the same batch, even if you take, say, half the dough and put it in the freezer and freeze it as dough and not take all eight challahs at the same time and just freeze the challahs, but you might freeze the dough, but you made it together as one big dough, then it would be chayiv in challah. But if you're making this initial dough that's at the next stage, they're going to divide up as two different items, which would then you will consider that you wouldn't want them to mix. This is going to have something chocolate added to it, and this one not. There's some bread, and this one become cake, something like that. So then we'll say that it's potter from challah, because even though right now it's one big dough, but they're going to end up as two separate doughs, where the two separate doughs are considered separate entities, and each one is less than a shear, so then you don't take challah from it. A factory that makes a large amount of dough, but is going to be selling it at a loaf of bread per person, or even two or three, but you're going to be selling it to individuals in small amounts, and not for sure that anybody's going to be, any single person's going to be buying a shear challah. Nevertheless, even though the intention is that it goes to individual homes and it's as if they're baking, because of the discussion that when the olden days when people didn't have ovens, so a woman made her dough and brought it to the bakery to have it baked and then took it home again. So there's a discussion over there if the fact that her dough's in the oven the same time as her neighbor's dough, will you have to take challah on it? And we say no, because each person's dough is individual and they're makbid, they don't want to switch. In a factory, even though this seems to be what you're doing, if you're making for each individual person, it goes to different households, nevertheless, at the time that it's made at the factory, this is the way the factories work, therefore they chayiv in challah with a bracha. The minig is that the amount of challah that you take off for challah, there was in the times of Chazal when the dough was made betara, and the kohenim retained their tara and ate the challah betara, so then you gave a specific amount. The amount given is 1/24 for a household, and for a bakery it's 1/48. Min ha-toira, there's no shear given, so therefore even a crumb would be good enough to fulfill the requirement. However, Chazal told us that's not how we do things. It's the same thing with truma. Truma also is a kol shehu, and it's dealing with Masan the Mishnah and Peah. Peah also is a kol shehu, poiter is kol ha-sadeh. But Chazal gave shiurim for these things, and in challah the shear was 1/24 or 1/48. A mice today, where the challah is not eaten, because we don't make our doughs, we're all tamei meis, and therefore even if we've been to mikveh, that's not good enough for tumas meis. One has to have the efer parah, the ashes of the parah aduma. We don't have that, so therefore all our doughs are considered tamei, and all our kohanim are considered tamei, and therefore it cannot be eaten. Therefore we don't take off the according to the shears Chazal made, but rather you take off a kazayas, and a kazayas, as we said, is an olive size, which is half the size of an egg. If someone is taking challah as a chumrah, what they call in Trumas and Maaser, called iba maaser, you take maaser a second time, you don't rely on the store to have done it for you, you're taking it home. But so too, if you buy bread, you don't want to rely on the mashkiach to have remembered it to have done it every single time. There are people who have that minute. Then even a kazayis there is not necessary. Even a small amount less than a kazayis for the sake of iba maisering would be fine. So you take you have your dough, you remove a kazayis size of dough from the batter. Then you make the bracha. Shake it a shot of the mitzvot mitzvana lahafish challah. Some add on the words min ha'isa. And then you pronounce the dough that you have set aside and call it challah. You say, harei zu challah. You don't do it the other way around, because all mitzvahs with some exceptions that we've spoken earlier, the Gabi Netila Shadayim and Tvila and those things, but we mentioned Derech Agav last week, the Gabi Hadlach Sneris, but all mitzvahs, we first make the bracha and then you do the mitzvah. So you take the dough aside, but don't designate it as challah. You just remove it, then you make the bracha, and now you do the mitzvah, and you designate it, it's called Kodesh Shem, you give it a name, you say Harei Zu Challah, that makes it challah, and then you mekayim the mitzvah. What do we do with challah today? We burn it. There's not much else you can do with it. And there's a difference between challah d'oraisa and challah d'rabbanon. In Eretz Yisrael, challah is a mitzvah d'oraisa from the Torah. In Chutz Laaretz, it's a mitzvah d'rabbanon. Therefore, we're more machmir in Eretz Yisrael. So, generally speaking, we say do not burn your challah in the oven because it will make your oven treif unless you wrap it up. And therefore, it is not recommended to burn your challah in the oven. Another point is that challah belongs to the Kohanim. Now, even though it's Tomei, so they can't eat it, but they can have other benefits from it. And they can burn the challah and enjoy the warmth or the light that gets given off from it. And it has such things in places where they produce oil and they take trumas and maisas from the oil. So that truma is Tomei and has to be discarded. Kohen cannot eat the truma. Betuma, but he can use it for his Shabbos candles. And I think there are places here that sell Shemen Lamor for Kohanim. If you're a Kohen, you can buy this type of oil and for your Shabbos candles. If he uses it in his house and you are non-Kohen, you come in, you can use that light because that's you're allowed to enjoy what the Kohen is enjoying for himself. But a non-Kohen cannot do that. A non-Kohen cannot buy Shemen Srefa, as they call it, to use for his candles. Only a Kohen can. So too, when you burn the challah, if you're burning it in order to warm yourself up, that can only be done by a Kohen and not non. Okay, that basically gives a nice summary of Hilchos Challah. And now we can move on to some more preparations of Erev Shabbos. So we know that the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos is a mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos. Oneg Shabbos is to enjoy the Shabbos by having good foods, Shein of the Shabbos Tanuch, to have a Shluchim Shabbos. At Kedei Kach we say that if one of these things is considered an Oneg for you personally on a subjective level, hold that it's not Oneg, so then you don't have to do it. We don't force a person to eat if that is going to be to his detriment. Someone who is suffering with a stomach ailment or something like that, or he's overeaten or whatever it is, you don't say, oh, you're Shabbos now, you've got to eat. No, if for him, his Oneg is to fast. See later on, that's like the mitzvah for him is to fast. Not so partial, the person has to know himself well enough and not say, well, I feel like fasting. It's got to know that he tried to eat and he can't. But so too, we're going to say types of food and things like that. If it's recommended to be halacha to eat this type of food and you don't like it, then some of us are going to say that a person should have hot food on Shabbos. He doesn't like hot food. I don't know who doesn't. But if there is someone like that, then fine, don't eat hot food. Because Shabbos, after all, the reason why we eat and the reason why we're doing all these things is for Tanuk and not for Tzah. So a person doesn't do it and it causes him discomfort, then that's not Tanuk. Don't do it. So there's a mitzvah of Kavod, there's a mitzvah of Tanuk, of Oneg. And it's a mitzvah that a person should get involved in it and do it with zrizus to prepare for Shabbos according to his abilities and according to his financial abilities. We say that mizonoso should adam ketuvin lo mi Rosh Hashanah ad Rosh Hashanah, because Baruch Hu gives everybody a budget. And if a person overspends, he's going to be short. If a person underspends, he might have extra. But there's a decision. I mean, the Gemara tells a story of one of the Tanoim. I think it was Rabbi Akiva, but I'm not sure. One of the Tanoim dreamt that his nephews were going to have an expenditure of 400 zuz this year. And he encouraged them the whole year round to give tzedakah. He kept them pushing them. And and at the end of the year, they hadn't given stock to the value of the 400 zuz, or whatever the difference between what they had given and the 400 zuz. I think the tax man came and took the difference. The Gemara discusses why didn't he just tell them straight out, you've got to say, right, don't give. Or not remember the answer over there, or the Achronim asked the question. But the point of what the Gemara was bringing over there is that he understood that they were going to have expenditure to this degree. You might as well give it to Stocker and not have it go to the tax man. So therefore, Okay, doesn't mean a person should now just write a check where all the money is in the bank, give it to tzedakah, and then the rest of the year he's going to be penniless, not consider the way to live. But you should just know that you live in a normal way, but what comes out at the end of the year, at the end of the day, has been decided already in Rosh Hashanah. There's not much you can do about it. You've got to do your status according to your level of bitachon. Chutz, says the Gemara, with the exception of expenses for Shabbos, Yom Tov, and the Talmud Torah. Some guests have also Rosh Chodesh, and therefore a person should consider spending beyond his normal means. Doesn't mean a person should go bankrupt. It doesn't mean a person should take Chas V'Shalom, should take loans. I say Chas V'Shalom, we'll see in a moment about the loans in a moment, but that's not what a person should be doing. But he should stretch himself beyond his what he considers normal expenditure, because that's, because Baruch Hu said, is not included in your budget, and therefore you can spend more than you normally do on having and making sure that the Shabbos meals that you have at least fulfill the minimum requirements. So the minimum requirements is that a person should have at least two cooked foods, and then they should have bread, should have challah, and should have wine, and have at least two cooked foods. And that he should have three meals on Shabbos, the night meal, the day meal, and the afternoon meal. Those are the minimum requirements. Legabe, meat and wine. It's not a chiyuv like in Yom Tov. Yom Tov has simcha added to it, and therefore there's a requirement to have meat and wine. Shabbos is not a requirement, but Chazal recommended it very highly that a person should, if possible, spend on better quality food and have meat and wine. And one of the things that's brought down is that a person should have fish. Fish is something I'll be swarim. It says you should have fish at every meal. And again, as we said before, if you don't like fish, then don't eat fish. After all these things were given to Talmud. And if you don't like fish, you don't have to force yourself to eat it, just to be Mekayim, the Inyan of eating fish at each. The stocker funds, the people who are in charge of money of the stocker to give out to their name, so the Gaboyim, have a chiyuv of using the funds available to them to give out to their name, so that they should receive enough food that fits their stature, their status in society. It's not just here's a potato and here's a boiled egg and now you've got two cooked foods and that's that. It has to be according to the kavod of the anim, and it has to suffice for three meals. To cut a bare minimum meal in two and say, well, now I've got two meals instead of one, is not considered as two meals. A bare minimum meal is a meal, and when it's cut in two, it's a half a meal. Half a meal is not counted. Now, there's an interesting few minutes. There's an interesting, what appears to be a contradiction in Ma'amore Chazal. Chazal tell us, on the one hand, Asei Shabbos Chazchol Va'al Titztorech Lebrius. Person should treat Shabbos as a weekday if the alternative is to go collecting. Don't come to rely on others for the sake of upgrading your Shabbos from weekday status to Shabbos status. On the other hand, we say, Bni, levu alai vani parea. Because Baruch Hu says, my son, borrow on my guarantee and I'll pay you back. So it seems like we've got an open card. You can go borrow as much money as you want, because Baruch Hu will pay you back. On the other hand, it says, no, asei Shabbos hasol, you should not upgrade your Shabbos and make it like a weekday, and not go and rely on people to help you out. So how do we reconcile the two, what appear to be a contradiction? And basically the Achronim come to the conclusion as follows. If a person has enough food for two meals on Shabbos, then that is considered a weekday allowance. Shabbos is you've got to have three meals. The speciality of Shabbos is you've got to have an extra meal during the day to make it into three meals, when they usually didn't have that extra meal. Because remember, he's still going to eat Melava Malka. So that he's going to have a night, you have a morning meal and you have a night meal. And Shabbos, you have an afternoon meal. A regular day, you only had a morning meal and a night meal. Breakfast was considered Pashachas or something, just to get you going until you ate something for lunch, or you just had an early lunch. But breakfast doesn't have place in Halacha as such. Refer to as Pashachas, as I said. So essentially they ate two meals, and on Shabbos, you add another meal into the day. So if a person has enough for two meals for Shabbos, then we say, Asei Shabbos Chol. That's considered as treating Shabbos as a weekday, like any other day in the week, you only have two meals. So Shabbos, you're only going to have two meals. Then we say, Va'al Titzorech Lebrius, don't go collecting dough, rely on other people in order to fulfill your requirement of Shalosh Seudos. But you've got to have at least two meals. If a person doesn't have at least two meals, then we come onto the next phrase of Levu Alai Vani Poreah. that once you need, you can't go without two meals. That's the basic minimum. So once you go collect, then you collect for three meals. Now, collect doesn't have to mean literally collecting, because the halacha of choze al apsochim, which means to knock on people's doors and ask for a handout, applies to Nero Shabbos. You shouldn't sit in the dark. If you don't have even a single candle, then you're supposed to at least beg in order to get enough money for a single candle. I mean, to us that sounds ludicrous, because a candle is so insignificant in the bigger picture of what it means to live today, with housing costs and energy costs and all the rest. But once upon a time, that was considered an expense, and therefore you went out collecting to have a candle. But for food, you don't have to collect, but you should at least borrow. Now, when we say levualai vani pared, does that mean I get an open card and borrow what I like? So to that, there's a machlokes achronim. Most achronim hold is you're borrowing based on future income. In other words, you have an investment, or you know that something's going to be, but right now you're short. Right now you have nothing available. You have maxed out on your credit card and on your overdraft, but there is something green on the horizon coming. So then we say you borrow and you tell the lender, listen, I'll pay you back when I get paid in, when this investment unfreezes itself or liquidates or whatever, but you know what you're doing. So then what's the promise? I'm going to pay it back. What's the promise for Ani Korea? No, if you do borrowing for Shabbos, then it's a promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to help you out, that loved us, you're going to have to sell your asset. So a person has a field, it's a piece of real estate, but right now he has no income. So he borrows, and on the chance that if he defaults on the loan, he will foreclose on the field and then use that to pay back the loan. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if it was for Shabbos, I'll take care of it. There is a shittel. The Vilna Gaon holds that you can even borrow if you don't have what to pay back, but you have to notify the lender, the person who's applying the funds, that I'm borrowing for Shabbos and I have no way of paying it back. And you know, the risk is then yours accordingly. So that's machlokes how to deal with it, and that's basically how to work on that person's finances so that he should have enough for at least the basic minimum requirements of Kavod Shabbos, is having two cooked things at three meals on Shabbos. And with that, we'll hold it there for this week. I'm wishing everybody a wonderful week, and we'll see you again next.
Thank you.